Hello, this is Chris with the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, November 26th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. Lovey gets an extension. Contract keeps football coach around till 23 from Champaign. Josh Whitman made his stance intractably clear Sunday. 3 seasons and 2 recruiting classes are not enough to accurately evaluate Lovey Smith's tenure as Illinois football coach. The third-year Illinois athletic director doubled down on that idea by announcing a 2-year contract extension with Smith that will keep him in Champaign through the 2023 season. Whitman stressed program stability as a driving force behind his decision, doing so now after Smith compiled a 9-27 overall record and a 4-23 Big Ten mark in his first 3 seasons, was made in part to forestall further discussion about Smith's future at Illinois. "Actions speak louder than words," Whitman said. "We had a number of different ways we could have approached this Sunday. We thought the extension was the most meaningful. We wanted to demonstrate firmly and strongly that this is a direction that we believe in. This is a person we believe in. This is a program that's on the rise." That recruiting picks up considerably in the month of December also played a role in Whitman's decision to extend Smith now. Illinois has commitments from top 100 players Marquez Beeson and Isaiah Williams in the 2019 class, but the group as a whole ranks just 66th nationally per Rivals. The early signing period for football starts December 19th. This Illinois staff has just 24 days to add to the 11 current commitments. Anytime you get a coach, especially in football and men's basketball, where they have less than 4 years left on their contract, you start to leave them open to some criticism or vulnerability in terms of recruiting, certainly. We thought after this 3rd year it was important to send that signal. We've got 3 intense weeks here of recruiting in front of us. We all understand the negative implications that a particular narrative could have on those efforts. If we allow that story to continue unchecked, that coach is in trouble and Illinois doesn't have stability. I think that damages our ability to go out and recruit high-level players and to recruit high-level coaches. We're into a phase of our year now where those are some of our most important tasks. Smith's initial contract at Illinois was for 6 years and $21 million. As it stands, his buyout currently sits at $12 million. The original contract calls for that number to drop to $4 million after the 2019 season. Whitman didn't have specific details Sunday on if or how Smith's contract would change with the extension. "We're still working through some of those terms. We'll bring those to the Board of Trustees for their vote at the January meeting. I do think this won't be a new contract. It's largely the same contract. We're not tearing up what we have, but we'll add some years to the end. We're still working on what some of those terms might look like. I don't anticipate any significant salary increase as part of the extension." Illinois' 4-8 record this season was not what fans had hoped for. While the offense improved under first-year coordinator Rod Smith, the defense took several steps back. Illinois finished 127th nationally in total defense, giving up 508 yards per game. The Illini also ranked 123rd nationally by allowing 39.4 points per game. That didn't affect Whitman's thought process in giving Smith the 2-year contract extension. "On the offensive side of the football especially, we took a tremendous step forward this year. I don't think there's any reason we can't take a similar step on the defensive side of the football this coming off season. We have a team that's 80% freshmen and sophomores. Eventually, we have to go from being a young football team to being a mature, experienced football team. This decision puts us in the strongest position to allow that to happen. I'm not going to sit here and say we're pleased with the results of every game we've had this year. We're not. If Coach was sitting here, he would say the same thing. But we do think there are a lot of good things happening." And from Urbana, owner wants to cut ties to Urbana. 2 years ago, Tom Bergen requested that the city of Urbana de-annex 1.6 acres of land he owns on the other side of Interstate 74 on Perkins Road. It made sense to him. All the homes on that road, including his own just next door, lie outside the city limits in Champaign County jurisdiction. and this small parcel, unused and adjacent to the Saline Branch drainage ditch, lost its initial annexation purpose after the previous owner died. Why keep it in the city and pay those taxes when the land, for all intents and purposes, may as well be in the county? That's the argument Bergen plans to make at tonight's City Council meeting of the whole meeting. It appears to be an uphill battle. Urbana City staff are recommending council members vote down an ordinance disconnecting the property at 2209 East Perkins Road, noting that Bergen bought the land knowing it was city property. To which Bergen counters, that's bureaucracy at its worst, and another example of the city ignoring him. I mean, I'm going in knowing I'm going to get shut down, Bergen said of tonight's meeting, calling the whole situation sad and frustrating. And they ask me, don't you want these city benefits on your property? But I'm not even living there. It's empty land. Back in 2009, Scott Plunk asked the city to annex the property as he was planning to demolish a decrepit house and replace it with a new home and machine shed. But before he could start building, Plunk died, leaving the land empty but in city jurisdiction. When Bergen bought the lot in June 2015, he told the city he didn't intend to build a new house or a machine shed and wanted to keep it as open land adjacent to two other properties he owns to the west. A year later, he put in a request to disconnect the parcel from the city, which was given initial approval in January 2017 by the Committee of the Whole in a 4-3 vote. But when it went to the full council a month later, the city deferred the case to a future meeting, the one scheduled for tonight. In an effort to give his side of the story when the issue first went to the council, Bergen was prepared with maps, statements, and packets he gave to each council member. Recently, he said he asked city staff to come out and look at his property from the ground, but he said he never received a response. He said the city wants and wants, but they don't listen. Why this pasture across the road is county and everything else is county, but this small finger jutting out is city, I just don't understand it, Bergen said. I can't vote for a council member. I can't get a library card because my house next door is in the county. And even county officials come here, not city. I pay the taxes but get none of the benefits of being in the city. This year, Bergen said a car went off the road during an accident and came to a stop just behind his shed at 2209 East Perkins. County officials were the ones that came out, and I told them, I don't mean to impede your investigation, but this is city property. The investigators all looked at each other and then just said, well, we're too far into our investigation, so we'll handle it. The city just doesn't come out here. But Urbana has its reasons for not wanting to disconnect the property. In a memo, city staff said there is no good reason for the city to grant the disconnection request, and doing so would negatively affect the city's ability to annex other properties along Brownfield Road and could encourage others with property within the city to request disconnection. Should the city approve Bergen's request and the undeveloped parcel to the north is developed, staff say it will be more expensive for the city to annex that parcel at some future date, and it is within its comprehensive plan to annex it anyway. Bergen said he feels disillusioned by the city. I'd lived in Urbana my whole life, he said, and the city just seems to be set in its ways. Over and out, revered official with a huge heart turning in his badge, from Urbana. With the ink on his accounting degree barely dry, Dan Walsh matriculated from the University of Illinois to the streets of Urbana as a cop in June 1973. Little did he know how well that number-crunching education would serve him later as the chief executive officer of a major law enforcement corporation. On Friday, the 67-year-old Walsh will leave his downtown Urbana office, the longest-serving sheriff in Champaign County history. The job is bigger and more complex than I thought it would be, both in terms of the jail and personnel issues, said Walsh, known for his soft-spoken demeanor and ability to get along with just about everyone. While he won't be riding off into the sunset, he is headed a couple blocks west. He plans to rejoin the law firm of Frederick and Hagel, where he spent 23 years prior to his election in 2002, doing only what he wants to do. The perfect retirement. Not long after taking office, Walsh knew he was on his own when he approached then state's attorney John Pyland and then presiding judge J. G. Townsend to talk about the overcrowded jails, a chronic problem he inherited. Opened in 1980, the jail at 205 East Main Street was never big enough, and the satellite jail opened in November 1996 at 502 South Learman Avenue in Urbana didn't solve the problem. Walsh said Townsend and Pyland advised him that jail crowding was a county board problem and that the board would simply have to give him more money. I told them, as far as I knew, the county board didn't have the money. I did truly believe that. When Tom DeFontis became presiding judge and Julia Reitz became state's attorney, both in 2004, Walsh began meeting regularly with them and then public defender Randy Rosenbaum. We decided there are people in jail who did not need to be in jail. When the population inched up, the system players took steps to move people out, resolving cases with dismissals, community-based sentences, or state prison stints. Numbers kept by Walsh's executive assistant, Teresa Schleins, show that in 2003 there were 10,204 intakes to the jail. In 2017, that number was 5,315. The maximum capacity of the two jails, if everyone is perfect, is just over 300. With mentally ill folks, gang members, pregnant women, and sick addicts, prisoners must be separated for their safety. On November 6th, for example, Walsh had 145 inmates dressed and bedded, and another 19 in the book-in area waiting to be admitted or in need of medical supervision. Of the total, 45 were downtown and 100 at the satellite jail. Another 32 were on electronic home detention. We use the heck out of the downtown jail because it has small spaces. Given its deteriorating condition, including a leaky flat roof that has never been fully replaced, that building is not optimal. I am hopeful that when the new county board gets in and the nursing home stops drawing funds, the board may look at an add-on to the satellite. We'd all be better off in one facility. Without question, the most difficult challenge Walsh has dealt with as sheriff was in-custody deaths, including 5 suicides. I hate to even use that word, he said solemnly. 2 years into his first term, 3 men took their own lives while in custody. Another did so in 2009, and yet another in 2011. After 2, we changed how we provide mental health treatment. We do give good quality of medical and mental health care to inmates. They are a difficult population to treat. Inmates seldom tell the truth, he said, referring to medical histories. He has been fastidious about releasing seriously ill inmates in need of hospitalization or ongoing medical services so that his office doesn't have to pay those health expenses. Plus, getting inmates to and from care outside the jail is expensive because of the man hours involved. In the 16 years I've been here, our inmates present themselves with many more and more serious mental and physical issues. The increase in mentally ill inmates stems from the closure of state mental health centers and a lack of state-funded community resources. Addiction is a huge problem to alcohol and other drugs. It is not uncommon to have a pregnant prisoner addicted to alcohol and heroin. We have to treat the inmate to protect the fetus. Coming in second to worrying about inmates is supervising staff. I came from a law office with 20 employees and no unions. As sheriff, he was supervising about 150 full-time employees and negotiating with 5 labor unions. The number of employees is about the same now. Complaints about personnel, he said, range from something as seemingly minor as a deputy who didn't write a report to a rogue correctional officer who inappropriately used a taser on an inmate. That man was quickly outed by his own co-workers and prosecuted. Finding a staff to reflect the diverse population of Champaign County has always been tough. A couple of years ago, I sent letters to all the churches in town, hoping to draw in minority applicants. As best I could tell, it didn't do me a bit of good. It takes a special kind of person to be a correctional officer or a road deputy. You might be in the middle of a dangerous situation, and backup is 20 minutes away. It is also difficult to attract qualified minorities because Champaign and Urbana police pay more. I lost two deputies in July who got an increase of about $25,000 to go to Champaign. The sheriff is arguably diverse himself, or at least has done a lot of interesting things. He grew up in a Chicago suburb and came to the U of I to study accounting. He had long had an interest in law enforcement and figured he would try police work for a couple of years, then be an accountant. A week after getting his undergraduate degree, Walsh started as an Urbana police officer. He had also interviewed to be a Champaign County Sheriff's deputy and got just a tiny taste of discrimination in the hiring process. The late sheriff, Everett Hedrick, interviewed Walsh and liked what he saw, except the heavy mustache. I said, "Sheriff, thank you very much, but I'm not shaving my mustache." So the only way I could work here was to be elected, Walsh recalled with a grin. Incidentally, he never had a bona fide opponent in four elections. A former deputy ran a write-in campaign against him in 2010. Walsh wasn't on patrol too many years when he decided to pursue his law degree. He took classes at the U of I during the day and patrolled at night. After getting his law license, he even continued to work another year as an Urbana police officer, at the same time having a part-time job at Johnson, Frank, and Frederick, a firm to which his name was later added. Since arresting clients isn't great business for a law firm, he put away his badge and went full-time as a lawyer in 1980. During those next 20-plus years, he became a father, a landlord, and even a cattle farmer, getting up to 30 head. That meant he also had to learn how to grow hay to feed them. When he was elected sheriff, he set aside his other business interests. Part of Walsh's personality and popularity with his staff is recognizing the value of the people with whom he works. "I'm really blessed with my command staff. It's rare I have to get involved in personnel issues. And Executive Assistant Teresa is well organized and keeps me on track." Chief Deputy Alan Jones, who had hoped to succeed Walsh, said his boss's best two leadership qualities were seeking input and his knack for always being willing to give everyone, without exception, a second chance. That even applied to the raccoons Walsh trapped in his barn to keep them from stealing the dog food. He would always turn the first offenders loose. When I asked how he would know if they were a first offender, he explained that he would use an orange spray paint on the behind of the raccoons he caught before turning them loose. Unless he captured one with orange paint on its rear, all others were relocated to woods down the road. To my knowledge, no spray paint was ever used while he was in office, but I am aware of a lot of people benefiting from the kind-hearted benevolence of Dan Walsh, said Jones, a 29-year employee of the sheriff's office. "He is definitely not an all-about-me type of person," added Schleitz, who has been his work wife for 16 years. An almost 30-year employee, Schleitz worked for two sheriffs before Walsh. She recalled only one time he got upset with her. She had quietly arranged for attendees at a Police Training Institute graduation, where Walsh was the keynote speaker, to sing "Happy Birthday" to him. "Believe me, he was not happy," she said. Captain Shane Cook, a 14-year sheriff's employee who now oversees patrol, said he values Walsh's trustworthiness and patience, as well as his legal and business acumen. One statement he made to me that is so true due to the amount of tasks we have going on at any one time is, "We try and make the least bad decision so we have a positive outcome for all." Captain Kari Voges, a 15-year employee who has run the jail for 4 years, said Walsh has a great ability to listen even when she offered too much. He would ask me, "Is this a long or a short story? Or tell me the one-minute version." I can't tell you how many times in my time of doubt I heard from him, "You got this." He has a huge heart for his employees and only wanted what was best for the employees, the county, and the sheriff's office as a whole. Aside from the people, Walsh was willing to try new tools. The sheriff's office was the first local police agency to use tasers in 2003. Despite some public opposition, Walsh maintains tasers prevent serious injury to his officers and those who want to put up a fight during arrest or in the jail. His was the second local agency to put body cameras on deputies in 2015. During his tenure, the office has added canine partners both on patrol and for courthouse security. There are currently three on patrol and one for the courthouse. Responsible for the security of county property, Walsh had to deal with about five bomb threats at the courthouse in his first 5 months in office. In making the decision to close it, those are the days when I wish I had a boss. Republicans working on 2020 vision. Among the musts, a better message for younger voters from Champaign. Less than 3 weeks after a brutal election outcome for Champaign County Republicans, they're looking down the road at the next big challenge. That is, how to avoid another blue sweep of countywide offices in 2020. Six Champaign countywide offices will be up for election when Americans choose their next president, county coroner, county recorder, circuit clerk, state attorney, circuit judge, and county auditor. Democrat George Danos won the auditor's office in the November 6th election for a two-year unexpired term, which places the office back in play in 2020. And Circuit Judge Jason Bohm said he'll be running as a Republican in his first election after being appointed to the bench earlier this year. Three other countywide offices up for election are currently held by Republicans: Circuit Clerk Katie Blakeman, Coroner Dwayne Northrup, and Recorder Mark Sheldon, and all three said they plan to run again in 2020. For Northrup, that's in spite of the shock I received in the last election. While he wasn't running in this month's midterm election, Northrup said he hasn't fully processed the defeat of other Republican officials he believes contributed significantly to county government. To lose all that experience and wealth of knowledge is a hard thing for Champaign County. Sheldon said beginning work for the next presidential election starts with a look back for him. We have had an incredible slate of extraordinary individuals who brought so much to the table last time and worked really hard. That's the first thing we need to do, is have good people who are willing to work hard. That is what was right about this last election. What was wrong is we weren't able to communicate our candidates to the voters. He sees three issues for his party to address. One is acknowledging it wasn't a single problem, such as voter dissatisfaction with President Donald Trump, but multiple problems in the last election, and we have to identify what those problems are and mitigate the ones we can't get rid of. Along with that, Sheldon said it is the need to address the areas of Champaign-Urbana where GOP support isn't as strong as it used to be, and the turnout in rural areas that didn't increase as much in the recent election as it did in the two cities. I really feel that we can address these challenges and be successful, Sheldon said. If I didn't, I would spend more time recreating and less time campaigning. Republican County Board member John Rector is also in a seat up for election in 2020. In 2016, he won by just 38 votes. In 2 years from now, with what's happening at the top of the ticket with the Republicans, it'll be a challenge. Given his promise to always vote his conscience first and his party second on the county board, Rector said he found it disappointing that many voters didn't do their homework. These students on campus are so bright, and all they went by, they were told that Donald Trump is horrible and don't vote for any local R. I applaud them for voting, but they need to do their homework. A particular challenge for Republicans at the local level, Sheldon said, is that the average students who live outside the area but vote in Champaign County naturally gravitate toward national politics. For the Republican Party, we absolutely need to have a better message for younger voters. Republican John Farney, who will be handing over the county treasurer's office to Democratic opponent Laurel Prussing next month, said he ran his most grassroots campaign ever in the recent election, but work done by him and fellow GOP candidates couldn't trump voter dissatisfaction with Washington. Some of the feedback he has gotten post-election is that he didn't do enough to position himself as anti-Trump, though he doesn't see that making a difference. A certain segment of the voting population sees Republican and thinks Trump, especially those who are not tied into local issues. Despite the outcome, Farney said he still regards the campaign as having been a great experience, though he doubts he'll ever run for office again. "I have a sense of relief that has come over me," he said. "There are a lot of issues facing county government, and quite honestly, the keys to the castle have been handed over to the local Democrats, and they're going to have a lot of decisions to make over the next few years, and I wish them the best of luck." "Republicans have a message that should resonate with voters," Sheldon said. "One thing is what we're finding out among younger people is there are a ton of new entrepreneurs coming into the world. Those people, traditionally, that type of spirit has been Republican, but we're losing those people. We have to do what we can to get them back." Savoy Mayor Joan Dykstra, a longtime GOP precinct committee woman, said she hopes all voters will take time to know who they're voting for, from the top to the bottom of the ticket. "We have a great story to tell, being fiscally conservative and being experienced in the offices they hold. For instance, the recorder, coroner, and the circuit clerk, those three offices countywide are very experienced and do a fantastic job for the county. So we need to make sure that message gets out there for the next election." Sheldon, Blakeman, and Northrop likewise said it's a top priority to do the best job in the offices they were elected to do. Blakeman, who won a second term in the circuit clerk's office in 2016 after running unopposed, said she'll be reaching out to Democrats about to take over several county offices in much the same way Democratic State's Attorney Julia Reitz did for her when she was first elected. Blakeman approaches running for office as a series of job interviews. "You're asking all the people you talk with to select you for that job. So it is my job as an office holder. The way to win, to get a job offer, is first do the best job you can in that job you have, and then connect on a personal level with the interviewers. That includes student voters." When Blakeman was a student, she took the time to be well informed about who she was voting for, and I think there are a lot of students like that. Blakeman also said she understands that there are people who just can't see themselves voting Republican, and many are friends, fellow parents, and others she interacts with every day. So it's going to be her job to explain to voters why they should vote for her, even if they're not voting for the president. "If I can earn those votes, if I can't earn them by convincing them that I'm the best person to be in that job, then perhaps I don't deserve to be in that office." And from Urbana, a man receives first offender's probation. A Champaign man who admitted having fewer than 15 grams of a controlled substance more than a year ago has been sentenced to first offender's probation. If Nolan Westfield, 22, whose last known address was the 1900 block of Melrose Drive, Champaign, successfully completes 24 months with no further legal difficulties, then no conviction will enter on his record. Westfield's co-defendant, Demetrius Crockett, 20 of Champaign, admitted to police he had a BB gun. He was sentenced to a year of probation after pleading guilty to resisting a peace officer, but now has a pending petition to revoke that probation. Westfield was also ordered to pay fines and court costs and perform 30 hours of public service. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, November 26th. Please stay tuned.